Hello and welcome to Worlds Apart. Regardless of its outcome, the conflict between Russia and Ukraine will for years remain an open wound between peoples who once considered themselves brothers. And while fratricidal strife is as old as history, the confrontation over Ukraine may have given rise to a totally new phenomenon of instrumentalized and cultivated hatred. Who does it serve? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Tomas Kraus, professor of Russian history at the Eötvös Loránd University of Sciences in Budapest. Professor Kraus,
thank you very much for your time. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Hello.
You have been researching Russian and Soviet history for a long time, and you've also analyzed it from the perspective of Russia's relations with the West. This perception of Russians as bloodthirsty barbarians isn't a new idea, is it?
This is an old idea. If you want to pinpoint the historical roots of Russophobia, you have to go back to the 16th century. That was the time when Russia became, in a way, a rival to Britain. That was back then the British Empire. Since that period, we have seen Russophobia emerge time and again, taking new forms and serving new goals. But invariably it had to do with the competition in the global arena, as great powers confronted each other and fought for all sorts of advantageous positions on the global scene.
But Professor Kraus, as far as I understand, any anthropologist will tell you that this kind of fear and demonization of the other tribe is a natural phenomenon. Historically, humans have always fought over resources, territories and power. Don't you think that given Russia's size and influence, it's essentially inevitable for some Russophobia to emerge? And the same goes for xenophobia, Americophobia, etc.
Of course, all these different phobias have existed and will continue to exist. But we must always look for the powers that promote these phobias. We must see how much hate the people of a given country or region experience, how fiercely they are attacked. Because most of these phobias are not at all a grassroots phenomenon. For example, I was in Berlin a few days ago, and I did not see any anti-Russian sentiment when I talked to the people. Nobody harassed Russian speakers. Although we know from German Defense Ministry reports that there have been several hundred incidents, including attacks on monuments and statues, etc. But this isn't a popular movement. There are no pogroms. It's nothing like what happened during the anti-Semitic pogroms.
I understand what you mean.
This is a kind of hate that has different roots. Russophobia is an organized, top-down phenomenon, and it has always been that way.
So what you're saying is that from natural prejudice, which is inherent in all nations, Russophobia is now being deliberately and purposefully transformed into a tool for achieving specific goals.
Yes, this new type of Russophobia is part of the war in Ukraine. It's a means to ensure cohesion within the collective West to influence the population. The role of the media is critical. Channels like CNN, BBC, etc. I don't want to name all of them. It's all an effort to demonize Russia. We can see it every minute of every day.
So, if I understand you correctly, your argument is that some of the most progressive minds have decided to exploit humanity's most primitive instincts. But why? What is their end game here?
Let me give an example for the audience. In the EU, there is a top official in charge of foreign affairs by the name of Josep Borrell. He is anti-Russian to the core and doesn't even deny it. And he said that Russia must be defeated on the battlefield. What is his agenda? Why does he talk such nonsense? He is a man of tremendous responsibility, after all. What are we even talking about? A few days after I heard him say that, it dawned on me why. I watched a German woman in her 40s or 50s speak to a show on ZDF, a major German TV channel. She was from a younger generation, not the Hitler Youth generation. What she said was so baffling, I even remembered her last name. It was Gaub. I was amazed that a sentiment like that could be expressed in the very heart of Europe. She spoke in favor of pumping Ukraine with heavy weaponry, and her argument was that we should fight the Russians because they are attacking our liberal and postmodern way of life. So, this woman, a German citizen, wants Germany to fight Russia in the name of European values.
Professor Krauss, my understanding is that this battle has more than just a political dimension. It has also expanded into the realm of culture.
Yes, this is done in order to assert cultural supremacy over Russia. That's why I gave you the example of that German woman. This line of argument is simply baffling. For intellectuals to revert to some sort of racist or Nazi theorizing to cultural racism, it is unthinkable. There is a massive risk for Russia here as well if it fails to handle these developments properly. I am very worried about Russia's response. We must not go back to the 1940s or 1950s, back to the Soviet anti-cosmopolitan campaign.
I think it's an important thing to understand that under the banner of fighting Putin's Russia, all of Russia's cultural heritage, including the heritage of the 19th or early 20th centuries, is getting essentially cancelled. There are plenty of examples of this kind of idiocy happening. Could you tell us which one shocked you the most?
It was the authoritarian face of liberalism. It shocked me to see that it exists. Say, I have a position and it's not the official position of the EU, for example. Where do I express that position? At best, somewhere on the fringes. If I want to say I want a truce, I stand for diplomacy and peace. This is a very simple position, but where can I make my voice heard?
So you do not have access to the media?
You won't find this sort of opinions expressed anywhere in the media, not in Germany, not in Poland. But I know what people actually think. I've been to many European countries lately. People don't want war. They believe in peace. They are against pumping Ukraine with arms because peace cannot be achieved that way. But instead of peace and negotiations, we've got Russophobia, or Ukrainophobia. It works almost the same way on the other side.
I'll have to disagree with you here, because I do not see this anti-Ukraine sentiment in Russia, in part because we all have family in Ukraine.
No, there is no Ukrainophobia in Russia.
Every night, no matter what the media says, we call our relatives to check how they're doing. We worry about them all the time. So if someone says this war is easy on the Russian people, that's a lie. We realize this is a heavy burden, I would even say a great sin, and someday we will have to pay for it. But the thing is, the way I see it, is that the West left Russia no other choice.
That's the tragedy of it. There are at least four actors involved. I've already talked about the authoritarian phase of liberalism. They claim that Russia alone is responsible for the war, that the conflict began on February 24th. But it didn't. The war started way before that. I'm a historian, so I analyze phenomena from a historical perspective. This war began immediately after the collapse of the Soviet Union. The idea of breaking Russia apart was a concept that re-emerged in the early 1990s in the works of Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was a security advisor to several US presidents. Since then, NATO has been expanding eastwards, always eastwards. Now we are witnessing the backlash.
I think there is something to this conflict we haven't seen before. While the confrontation between Russia and the West had indeed begun a long time ago, way before the 24th of February 2022, we have never seen any attempts to ban Tchaikovsky or Dostoevsky until now. You may have heard the story about the 200-year-old oak tree in the Turgenev Museum, which was banned from participating in the European Tree of the Year contest in order to exclude Russia.
Turgenev's tree?
I mean, this is moronic.
They don't want it there.
Or is there some kind of deeper meaning here? Is there an underlying purpose, or are people just losing their minds?
The goal is to control the population, the public opinion, and to eradicate all other views. If Turgenev's oak has no right to exist in the West, people will want to know why. To explain this, they are told Russians are evil people, that they should be punished. They keep appealing to this sense of public conscience, to the idea of punishment. They keep trying to implant into people's minds the idea that Russians are some kind of barbarian. Therefore, European values must be abandoned in Ukraine. That's why they pretend that Ukraine is a democracy. They keep using these concepts as tools. You see, while there are a number of democratic countries in Eastern Europe, the majority are authoritarian regimes. Poland, for example, or the Baltic states, or even my own country. It is very important. After the collapse of the USSR, we falsified our ideology, saying that we follow the same development path as Europe. But this is simply impossible. You cannot build a bourgeois democracy without a pro-democracy middle class. Who is going to build democracy then? The oligarchs, without any culture, from scratch. What they did was concentrate all economic power in their hands through privatization, nothing more. Yet we hear all this nonsense about European culture.
Well, Professor Krauss, we have to take a very short break right now, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Tomas Kraus, professor of Russian history at the Eötvös-Loránd University of Sciences in Budapest. Professor,
earlier you mentioned the idea of appealing to people's consciences. It seems to me that the hallmark of Russian culture is its complexity and depth. It appeals directly to the human soul. It's not the only culture to do that, but that is certainly its distinctive feature. Would you agree that these attempts to cancel Tchaikovsky, Turgenev and Dostoevsky are intended to keep Westerners away from Russian culture? So that it cannot touch their souls and let them see through the haze of not only the Russophobia, but also of the entire capitalist system that basically squeezes the life out of people and some would say even dehumanizes us.
For example, as that German woman was talking all that nonsense, the presenter also made a point. He said that one cannot ignore the deep and rich Russian culture, which represents the pinnacle of human achievement. He had to admit that because everyone knows it. So the harm is not as great as we might fear. People won't be fooled this easily. The West is overdoing it. Some in the West are being overzealous in the way they carry out the orders from Washington and Brussels. Among the intellectual elites, I don't see anyone trying to directly target Russian culture. Sure, some may not wish to have contacts with Russian scholars. Some may refuse to correspond with Russian intellectuals, etc. But the hatred doesn't go so deep as to warrant a ban on Tchaikovsky or Tolstoy. I don't feel that kind of sentiment just yet.
It seems to me there's something almost superstitious or ritualistic about this movement to cancel Russia. You may remember the incident in Sweden when a concert in support of Ukraine was cancelled after the Swedish musicians found out the balalaikas they were supposed to play were made in Russia.
Balalaikas get cancelled. How crazy is that?
This is magical thinking in its purest form.
They think they are somehow helping the Ukrainians by doing all this, with all this Russophobia.
Can a Russian balalaika hurt the Ukrainians in any way?
They hope that this superstitious approach will help generate more support, more emotional solidarity with the Ukrainian refugees. But that's not true. We have been helping the Ukrainian refugees since day one.
We are helping them too. The Russians are helping.
People of all political views, all sorts of people are helping. I donated some money too. So all the hate against Russians comes from the top.
Maybe it's just the way I see it, but there has been a lot of mystical messaging in the dialogue between the Kremlin and the White House. For example, both Putin and Biden bring up God a lot. Also, Biden said some time ago that Putin had no soul, which was quite a strong statement. Do you think that this conflict between Russia and the West is defined merely by the struggle for geopolitical influence, resources, the right to decide for other nations? Or is it also a spiritual battle of some sort as well?
These things do not exist separately. The spiritual, the political, and the economic aspects all work together. There is a global conflict going on. The US and the collective West want to restore their hegemony in the world. To do this, they need to demonize each enemy that poses a real threat, like China, India, etc. There are new factors on the global scene and nobody really understands them well yet. This is all about a new world order.
Well, you say nobody understands them, but I think in Russia, at least I think I do understand them. The Russians, you know, have a certain inclination for mysticism.
Oh, certainly, but so do the Americans.
Sure, we are really close in this regard. We all believe we're the chosen peoples.
I'll give an example. President Biden often denounces President Putin, who never speaks back, by the way, and Biden is on a mission to fight Russian oligarchs. He isn't fighting against capitalism like I do. No, he's targeting Russian oligarchs. Why isn't he fighting American oligarchs? What's the difference? Russian oligarchs are bad. American oligarchs are good. This is mysticism in its purest form. How can one believe this? You're right. One can't if one is a rational person. It's a matter of faith.
I was struck by Russian soldiers painting Z on their vehicles. It's an ancient Slavic letter meaning the earth. Its other meanings were land, nation, people. It even denoted the human body in its entirety. So for Russians, it's an existential spiritual battle. What about the West? Does it understand it's not just about Ukraine, that it's much more than that?
You see, the people at large haven't internalized this yet. Only some might understand the meaning of this letter. But those in power hate this letter. They are trying to ban it. Can you believe this? Banning a letter? How is it possible? This is the civilized world, so to say, the West campaigning against the letter. There is a joke saying it's not Zelensky, but Yelensky. Crazy. You asked what is it that has shocked me the most. This has.
Professor Kraus, there might be some deep meaning to this. I love the Romanian philosopher and historian of religion, Mircea Eliade. He studied the connection between geography and spirituality. One of his most famous works is The Sacred and the Profane. He argues there that when a home or a land loses its cosmological meaning to a person, that the person's body and entire existence also lose their spiritual and religious dimension. Don't you think that by antagonizing the West, Russia is fighting globalization and the idea that a person should be detached from the land, from the history of his ancestors? The idea of being free and separated from the historical, cultural, and spiritual processes. Globalization, the idea that you can be anywhere, if you put it this way, is essentially against human spiritual nature.
You know, I'm a historian, so I speak from the historical perspective. In recent decades, globalization has brought about some tremendously negative consequences for all of mankind. I think everyone agrees on that today. But what was the response to these neoliberal globalist challenges? The response seems to be that they decided they can ride humanist and religious feelings and use them as a pretext to wage a war that actually has completely different real reasons. There is this issue of national self-expression in eastern Ukraine. This is the real issue.
На восточной стороне Украины. Это реальные вопросы.
This is also true for Western Ukraine. Russia never said it didn't want an independent process in Ukraine. It rather did not want the country to become a ground to launch an offensive.
They are hushing up all of Ukraine's problems. Overall, there isn't a single mention of negative aspects like Ukrainian Nazis in Western propaganda.
I have one last question about propaganda, coincidentally. In his speech announcing the start of the special operation in Ukraine, President Putin called the West the Empire of Lies. As I see it, that was a reference to President Reagan calling the Soviet Union an evil empire. I want to ask you personally, not as a historian or academic, but as a person. Do you believe that truth is power? That the truth always comes out sooner or later?
Honestly speaking, if I were to lose faith in humankind and the truth, my life would be meaningless. I cannot live without it. That's why I don't think generalized concepts like the West and the East are legitimate. They are too broad. When applied, they erase the diversity of the West, the East, and Russia. They give rise to cultural racism, Nazism, and Russophobia. Instead, we need to analyze the existing global and regional systems. Also, you have to have a critical approach to capitalism. Otherwise, it's impossible to solve any crisis, whether today or tomorrow.
Well, Professor, I think we had a very spirited conversation. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you. Goodbye.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart. We'll be right back.